Proceed to the eighth case, the United States versus Nelson. Pass it.
Good morning. At issue in this case is whether Kewaunee, Illinois police officers, while executing a state court-issued search warrant for the home of Corey Tompkins, had probable cause to arrest one of the occupants found in the resident, my client Christopher Nelson. District Court, following an evidentiary hearing, found that there was probable cause. We respectfully disagree and bring this appeal. Precedent from the Supreme Court in this court clearly establishes that one's mere presence on the premises being searched is not probable cause. One's association with others who are present on the premises is not sufficient for probable cause. One's mere proximity to objects found in the premises of another being searched with a search warrant is not sufficient for probable cause. Cibron versus New York, Texas versus Brown, Ibarra versus Illinois, the legion of cases goes on and on and on. And just as this
Did
court...
Did you just say Ibarra?
Ibarra, yes. Ibarra versus Illinois.
This case is different from Ibarra.
It is in
several ways, but most importantly... Boy, in Ibarra, there are plenty of legitimate reasons why a person might be in a bar that have nothing to do with the illegal activity. In this case, it was pretty clear the house had no purpose other than to be a crack house.
The home did indeed have a Sony PlayStation and big screen television in the front, in the living room premises, Your Honor.
No running water.
Well,
no bathroom breaks. Oh, my God.
Be that as it may, at this particular premises, the government is drawing that distinction as well in its argument. But this court in United States versus Johnson, 170 F. 3rd, cited in our brief, Johnson was a case where Milwaukee police had reason to believe drug dealing activity was occurring at a particular household. And when Mr. Johnson was seen leaving the premises, they immediately seized, detained, and searched his person. And this court said that merely because the police saw him emerge from a premises, not a tavern, not a public place, but a residential premises, believed to be the scene of controlled substance activity, that was not sufficient for reasonable suspicion for a Terry stop, let alone probable cause to arrest. And that is the point that the government failed to acknowledge or even respond in its primary brief, that this court in Johnson, relying on U.S. versus Cologne, has held that you don't stop people and search them who are merely seen leaving premises believed to be the subject of controlled substance activity. Now, on page 23 of our brief, we have a diagram of the premises that was prepared by the officers themselves. Their conclusory testimony at the suppression hearing was that these items of controlled substance activity were in plain view. I begged to differ at that hearing and noted that on their own diagram...
But they were in there on a search warrant.
Pardon?
Weren't they in there on a search warrant?
They were.
So it doesn't matter whether they're in plain view or not.
Well, again, but trying to attribute Mr. Nelson's proximity, knowledge, degree of control over the items.
So what about the comment by the female occupant? Well, if it's not on Nelson, then it will be in the kitchen.
In the kitchen. Interestingly enough, two police officers testified, Welgat and Ainley. That comment was attributed to an officer named Jagers, who never testified. And as our cross-examination of the two officers revealed, much to the district court's chagrin, this statement of Buffy Bertram, the white female, was never included in any of the incident reports that were prepared by the officers in connection with this case. Now, the hearing occurred months after the fact, and the judge took such strong occasion here to use such language as preposterous, unacceptable, unprofessional,
but he did
and
find,
yet credible?
He did find it credible and that it had occurred. The statement was made in the presence of the officers.
Two points. For clear air review, of course, this court must be deferential to the district court's factual finding. But as this court has recognized in other cases, clear air must be air that would leave the definite, unmistakable impression that something is wrong. And indeed, this court has gone so far as to say, so wrong as if to emit the odor of a two-week-old dead fish. Now, I respectfully submit that this kind of statement, it's preposterous and unacceptable. Can that be credible?
Well, was that officer unavailable?
I don't know.
Was he subpoenaed?
I don't know. The man never, I didn't see him in court that day, but he was, I believe, one of the key case agents in the case, and that is why the judge was so vociferous.
Well, maybe the judge is upset about his absence, not about what he allegedly heard. I don't know.
First, if there is no testimony in this record that the officers acted upon that statement so as to attribute any guilt to Mr. Nelson. And the second point that I want to make here is that then, once the premises were secured, Mr. Nelson was strip searched in the premises.
Yeah,
so if there's any credibility to what Bertram is saying, there's nothing. He had $292 in his pocket, but no controlled substance, and nothing was ever found in the kitchen. And then to top it all off, Ms. Bertram is released with no charges. But it's Nelson who, along with Tompkins, is taken to the police station where, when he refuses to give consent for his hotel room, another factor where the court went off and said, why isn't this in the reports and why did you destroy the first consent to search form? Ultimately, Nelson signed a second consent to search for a hotel room some distance away where they find the controlled substance.
And there's no doubt that Judge Mim was frustrated with the police, but his frustration didn't go so far as to, you know, say that Nelson didn't knowingly and voluntarily waive his Miranda rights or freely consent to the search of his motel room.
And indeed, we're not appealing those issues. We're saying that the illegal arrest without probable cause, the consent that was given was the fruit. So Brown versus Illinois would void that, along with this court's case of Saletti.
Yeah, but in the end, Judge Mim says, you know, this isn't a perfect situation. And the police at that time wouldn't have been able to prove him guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. But that's not the test. And under the totality of the circumstances, you know, he goes on and he finds there's probable cause to arrest.
Probable cause being defined by the Supreme Court and expounded by this court as a reasonable probability that the person to be arrested has engaged in criminal activity. The government says, well, a probability, a reasonable probability. And again, the circular analysis here is that what other factor then is there for arresting Christopher Nelson other than his presence on the premises, which appears to the court to say there's no good intent present in this household.
If I could go back to a point that Judge Rovner was raising earlier, do we have a case where the setting so states what apparently a reasonable person might think is going on? I mean, they didn't have a sign out front saying drug house, but do we have any analogous case that would suggest that the kind of indicia that a reasonable officer might read into this physical setting would not be enough?
Most of my cases that I've researched in this area fall into the Johnson Cologne standard, where the occupant is seen leaving
the
premises.
Yeah, but when you're outside the curtilage, I appreciate that.
They're coming out the front door, which I'm assuming if Mr. Nelson was encountered by the police as he's leaving the front door, then Johnson would control. The fact that he was found by the Sony PlayStation here and other items were found in other portions of the home. Again, how can we particularize probable causes to Christopher Nelson? If he were seated on the couch smoking a crack pipe, if he had a contraband on his person, if he had done what Tompkins had done, bolt from the police, physically resist, utter an incriminating statement, He wasn't seen doing any of that. He was basically moving away from the couch towards the west wall of the building, which is the Sony PlayStation TV set.
What's the dimensions of that room?
In fact, unfortunately, there is no record that I know of the physical dimensions of the living room proper. There's an upstairs, and there's a kitchen through which they enter a hallway into the living room area. No testimony was elicited by the government with respect to the dimensions of the room. So,
but when the police enter the house, you know, I mean, here's what they see in plain sight. Suspected cocaine residue on a spoon, a small trash can with
on the fireplace, by the steps where he was seen running, but the trash can behind the table, as I pointed out during my cross, behind the table is the trash can with the torn baggies. There was a wooden pipe, officer's testimony, a wooden pipe with unknown burnt residue on the end table closest to the couch. That's the closest item that they can attribute to Mr. Nelson.
A soda can poked with holes covered with burn marks.
Upstairs in the bedroom. In an upstairs
pipe
bedroom.
With suspected marijuana residue. No running water, no furniture upstairs. Oh, my. I know.
What is however that? Unkept, it was Mr. Tompkins' castle, and I'm sure he was very proud of the fact that he could at least accommodate it with the furnishings that did appear in the downstairs portion of the premises. But the point here, Your Honor, that we are strongly advocating for Mr. Nelson, his mere presence doesn't give permission to search. And
I'm so glad you come back time after time. I really want you to know that.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Daffy. Mr. McCoy.
What's wrong with all of you down there? Can't you give them one case?
May it please the Court, Your Honors. Co-counsel. My name is Mike McCoy, and I represent the United States in this case. Your Honors, the government has a very simple argument to make here this morning regarding this case, and that is that the police did have probable cause to arrest the defendant that day. And that's based on the fact that they entered this home. This was a home in which two controlled purchases of crack cocaine had occurred within the previous 2 weeks. One, the night before this search warrant was executed. It was a quintessential crack house. As has been already been drawn out, there was no running water. There was limited furnishings on the ground floor, no furnishings upstairs in the bedrooms whatsoever. There was a smell of urine and feces that permeated because there had been no water to flush the toilets. There were complaints, and this is what originally brought this house to the attention of the police. There were complaints from neighbors of heavy activity flowing in and out of this house. So a quintessential crack house. And when the police entered this house, Your Honor, Your Honors, they located the defendant in the living room. And strewn about the living room were various pieces of drug paraphernalia. And I have to correct counsel on one thing. There were the Pepsi can with the holes in it and the residue on it, as well as the plate. Those were located on the first two steps of the staircase leading up to the second floor, but they were clearly visible in the living room themselves. You had a trash can that was overflowing with plastic baggies and corners of plastic baggies surrounding the trash can. You had various other items, including a pipe with residue on it, a spoon with suspected cocaine residue on it, et cetera, et cetera. There are two other people that were found in the house at the time the police executed the search warrant, one of them being Buffy Burcham. And she did indicate that, in fact, made a comment to Officer Cervantes, not to Officer Jagers, to Officer Cervantes, that if it's not on him, it's in the kitchen, or words to that effect.
It is curious that that didn't make it into the reports, though. That's troubling.
Yes, Your Honor, and the government certainly wishes that the reports had been written better. But I think it's worth drawing out here and emphasizing that Judge Mim, after listening to the two police officers' testimony regarding this and other issues regarding their report writing, did inevitably find them credible. In fact, he's...
Reason why that officer was unavailable? The one who heard that statement?
Your Honor, I don't recall, but I know that she was not in court that day. I don't recall why she was not available, however. And again, ultimately, the judge found found their testimony credible. I mean, obviously, Judge Mim was clearly perturbed by the report writing in this case. His antennas were up. He was hypersensitive to the testimony of these two officers, and yet he still ultimately concluded that he thought they were being honest, that their testimony was, in fact, credible regarding what was said. I'll also point out that, as I mentioned earlier, there was a controlled purchase that occurred in this house the night before the search warrant was executed. At the time that that controlled purchase occurred, the CS who was involved was invited by Corey Tompkins to stay in the house and smoke crack cocaine there, the crack cocaine that he had just purchased. Based on all this, the police concluded, and the government argues reasonably so, that the defendant did not just stumble into this private residence, that he'd been invited into this private residence, that he knew what was going on there. And given the fact that what was going on in that house and what literally surrounded him in the room that he was found in when the police first made entry into that house, the police had a reasonable belief that the defendant had committed or was committing a crime at that time, and therefore they had probable cause to arrest him. If there are no further questions, I'll yield the balance of my time.
It would be an anomalous result, to say the least, that if Christopher Nelson were approached and encountered by the police at the front door, this court's ruling in Johnson would suppress the evidence seized from his person or prevent his being arrested at that point.
How far was Johnson from the physical...
Johnson was observed leaving the front door of the apartment when he was immediately accosted by officers who were approaching the front door. Nelson is in that living room. We don't know from this record when he arrived, how long he was there. 4 o'clock in the afternoon, not at 4 o'clock in the morning or any other mysterious time of day. Again, there is nothing other than his presence here by which the officers could arrest him.
Thank you, Mr. Tatton. Thank you, Mr. McCoy. The case is taken under advisement.